Mini episode 668 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by that NBA lottery pick, your pop culture influenced look at the world of hoops. Follow them on the web at that NBALotteryPick.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the FDH Lounge, the continuation of the history of the Royal Rumble series. We are starting part five with this one here. This is 5A, the 2003 Royal Rumble. Rick Morris, Kyle Ross bringing you the history of it. I will refer everyone back, as I do at the beginning of each and every one of these ones. Go back to 1A, 1988, if you want to hear about the overall thoughts on the Rumble, structure of it, what they tried to do with it, etc. We spend the first several minutes setting it all up. The rest of these years, we're focused on the macro of the picture to start, and then we've got the card itself. This is going to be one, we've talked about this off here, this is going to be one of the trickiest ones of all because there's so much macro to get to in 2003 here. In many ways, it's the beginning of the modern era. It's the start of the brand split. I know that your theme is split happens, 2003 to 2007. So we're getting through that. It's going to be tricky, but here we go. We're going to start with the macro. We're going to start with the setup of everything that led into 2003 and the very consequential decisions in the period that led up to this.
Well, split happens. I think I referenced this in 2002 when we previewed. This is one of the more creative nicknames for this. It was better than
very good.
It was better than the down years for 1993 to 95.
Yeah.
I guess more of a literal name. But anyway, all right. So WCW is long gone. We don't have to talk about that anymore. The Attitude Era is kind of now gone. We're not going to talk about that anymore. We are now in the brand split era, or as they liked to call it, the brand extension.
Don't call it the brand split.
Yes, yeah. It was the brand extension. So, the brand extension. Is our life better for it? I think it was kind of a silly question. I think the answer is no. But So let me follow up with this. Possibly also a rhetorical question. Was it a success?
No.
Could it have been?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
And that's, well, here's the thing. There are two parts to this.
Was it ever a success at any point?
No, and I'll tell you why.
Never at any point?
No, I don't think it was. I really don't think it was because Here's one of the things, too. You look at something that happened toward the tail end of the split. The summer of 2010, the Nexus invasion.
Oh, God, we're going to talk about that?
No. But I'm using this as an example. Here's the thing. It was symbolic of the split as a whole. And it fell apart for reasons that didn't have anything to do with the split. It was their own bad booking. But, Kyle, here's the problem with the split. The company is always, wouldn't you agree that the aim should always be to try to build to another, if you can, another boom period, a hot money period where wrestling is going great and you're printing money? That should be the goal, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, the goal for any company should be to make money.
Well, to try to build a boom.
Unless if Bernie Sanders says so.
Exactly. But here's the thing. You can't build a boom off of one brand because you can't do it off of just what's happening on Raw. You also have SmackDown. If you're trying to get the mainstream to tune into your product, you can't have a storyline just represented on one show out of two. You can't do it. It's limiting.
Okay, it's interesting you bring that up because My fear when this thing started in the late spring of 2002. Was, I didn't have SmackDown at that time.
Okay.
I was in college. I was a senior in college.
They didn't have it on WUB public television?
No, I think the answer still didn't change. I think we went over this the last time. And you're now asking me, and I actually made this point too, so this isn't earth-shattering.
Okay.
But just to repeat myself, I'll say this. You're now forcing, I shouldn't say forcing, but asking your audience to watch 4 hours of first-run programming with unique storylines on both. That's
right.
A lot. And I was like, man, that's as much as I love wrestling and I watch old wrestling, but like the thing is, you feel that if it's old wrestling, you can just stop whenever you want it already happen. It's not like, oh, God, I got to watch this. I got to keep up with this. you know, being the big sports fan that I am, and 90% of the stuff I watch on TV is sports, I really struggle to watch any, like, shows. I'm not a big show guy. I just don't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. It's not that
I have a handful,
to them,
but not too many.
But, yeah, I mean, for me, it's kind of like, all right, I'm going to focus on this show now because I like to get into them quite a bit.
Right.
I could never be watching three episodic shows at the same time. I've never been able to do that. Maybe there was a time when I was younger and I didn't have shit to do, but, you know, in this era where I'm watching so much sports, that doesn't happen. So that was a problem, but the way they did the split initially, I thought, sucked. It was kind of random. Remember they were doing that thing where Ric Flair lost ownership, and then there was really no good reason why they did it at the time. It was something you had heard about back to the point in 2001 when they bought WCW that they wanted to run two separate brands. And on paper, I can see why they do that. Vince had some good reasons that, all right, when you put these same guys on Raw and SmackDown, they become overexposed, and overexposure has basically been a huge issue for them over the past decade plus.
That's right.
You know, these guys, whether it's Cena or like Roman Reigns today or just anybody, they seem to get less over the more TV time they have.
Right.
So Vince's idea was, all right, well, if I split the TV up, half the guys are only on this show, half the guys are on this show, that'll at least chip away at the overexposure problem. And I agree with that point, for the record. I do agree with that point.
Good.
And secondly, although Austin had been irreparably harmed by the heel turn, you still had both him and Rock, and this was probably the only time in the history of any promotion where you had two guys over enough where you could split them up and have them each theoretically carry a quote-unquote brand.
Right.
Now, that fell apart immediately, and this is huge, and this needs to be talked about.
Right.
Austin left because of the booking.
Yep.
He was asked to do a job to Brock Lesnar on TV with no build in a King of the Ring qualifying match, which was a stupid idea. And so he left. Rock, this was more out of their control, went to Hollywood. And he really kind of, at this point, is now a part-timer at best.
Right.
I think, looking back at this, and those two things happened very early. Like, I mean, Austin was gone by June, and the brand split had happened in what, like April or May?
Yeah, April.
Rock was gone even earlier. You're talking 2 months out of the gate, this thing is in trouble.
Right.
So, from there, I just think that though they had depth, you exposed it a little bit when you split the rosters.
Right.
And they didn't really know what they were doing at first. And I'll give you an example. There's the thing with the split world titles.
Right.
Which was not handled well initially. But we're going to get to that at the end of this mini episode.
Right.
So table that for some people. But there was other things they did that showed a clear lack of long-term booking. For instance, on Raw, they had the Intercontinental title. They got rid of it, but then they'd wind up bringing it back like 6 months later.
Right.
So they clearly didn't know what they were doing. They're feeling their way out. And in 02, remember, they were still doing all the pay-per-views Raw and SmackDown.
Right.
Now, I think you did need to build up to brand-only pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm.
They did, I guess, but at the end of this episode as well, when I talk about the splitting of the titles and how they did a poor job with that, I'm going to talk about how really of a crappy job they did kicking off the brand-only pay-per-view era.
Right.
So, I agree with you that it was not a success.
Okay.
At points, it was.
Sure.
There
could be isolated points.
In theory, could it have been a success? I don't know. Because the reason I did the cutoff at 07, because the brand split actually goes beyond 07.
07 is when it really starts softening a lot.
That, because they cut off the brand-only pay-per-views in 07.
Right.
That's a tangible thing.
First big step.
And a name that we're going to talk about more towards the end of Part 5, not in these first two episodes, 03 and 04. It was very clear by 07 that John Cena was the guy in their mind that they were going to build this promotion around.
And right.
It's fine. They chose him. Whatever. We'll debate that in future episodes. At this time, with Rock and Austin leaving, mm-hmm. they didn't really have that one guy.
That's right.
So I understand. From 03 to like 05, it kind of worked at points, especially when you had Batista and Cena on the dual ascent. I thought that was
right.
good. And they wound up picking one over the other. Once they picked one over the other, then it was pointless, I think, to still have the split.
Right.
But in 02 and into 03, what was weird about it was they clearly had a star on the ascent then in Brock Lesnar, who we're going to start. We're going
right.
to talk about the Rumble 03 because so much of it's centered around him.
Right.
And he was doing great coming off SummerSlam.
He was.
He beats The Rock. And then they cut his legs out right away by doing a Raw champion, Triple H just handing him the title.
Right.
Again, table that to the end of the stuff. When we talk about the two title matches on this show,
right.
we'll go more into that.
Well, I got a quick thing for you here, a couple quick points on the things you were talking about here. One, going back to the beginning of the decision to do the split. They decided that the WCW brand was irreparably damaged in the invasion. So by doing Raw and SmackDown, it's a split that's not a total split, because if you have one of the brands set up as WCW, you could do an entire parallel year climaxing at Starcade. You had crossovers here. You would still have crossovers all throughout the year. Royal Rumble, which we're going to be talking about, all the big stars around WrestleMania, etc. So it's a split, but it's not a complete split, as we'll get into, because there's crossovers.
And I didn't mind that. I didn't mind how they had the big four. They were, you know, that obviously doesn't happen until we get through 03 and then in 04.
I think a split in the same company is dumb. Maybe it's my OCD, but call it something else and run a parallel promotion. That's my way of thinking.
Here's the problem. The WCW brand was irreparably damaged.
Okay.
And they didn't have enough of the big name guys from it due to their own arrogance and financial stuff to make that work.
How about the Sports Entertainment Federation? You know, you whatever you want to call it.
I don't know. Well, here's a couple things.
Okay.
I go back to, I believe, what my first statement was. It was just randomly done when they chose to do it. Like, it was after, there was no real reason. They were just like, yeah, we're going to split the rosters. And if I'm just a viewer who's not maybe plugged into, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff, I don't read things on the internet, I'm like, why are you doing this? It just seemed weird.
Right.
And if you had done a WWF versus WCW feud throughout 01 and carried it into WrestleMania and blown that off at WrestleMania, and then been like, oh, well, we have all these WCW guys now. By God, the war's really over. What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to split the brands up. That would have been okay. But they had killed that feud in November of 01.
Right.
And then it wasn't until April of 02 they decided to split the roster after they had told us all the WCW guys are gone, and then they brought them back anyway.
Isn't that a microcosm of what they did with the world title? Of we're only going to have one world title, and then we're going to have two? That's sort of the same kind of a thing. By the way, too, you talk about randomness. I should have thought to show this to you. I have a PW Torch from right about the time of the draft. I think it was the week after the draft.
Oh, no.
They were telling talents, according to Wade Keller, like, don't pay attention to, like, where you were taken or even what show you're on. We're doing this for TV purposes. They admitted to the talents that basically their slotting out, their diagramming of the rosters was going to be based on one night's TV ratings and what was going to be good for popping a number that night.
I thought,
this is
if I remember, that there were issues with that initial draft. Now, it was good. I think if I remember what, they each drafted just 10 guys on TV, and then the rest of the rosters were signed, which is good because it would make the other guys look really crappy.
Right.
It was like one, you know, like the,
and they
the
split the tag
the fat
teams.
Kid at, the fat kid at kickball. Now,
right.
the splitting the tag teams I thought was kind of dumb. They should have been drafted as acts.
Right.
But if I remember, SmackDown was actually stronger coming out of the draft. You had Rock and Hogan. Now, the Hogan, that temporary boost, whatever that was that he gave you, was kind of important given that Rock left. If you remember my kind of fantasy booking alert, I talked about in 02. I thought coming out of WrestleMania, you should have Triple H immediately turn heel, cheat to win over Steve Austin in the main event, and reform the Clique. And the Clique would have refused to participate in the draft. The Clique runs this industry. We're coming on both shows. And you could have feuded with Austin, theoretically, on Raw, who they would have had heat with
right.
in my hypothetical WrestleMania main event. And then, again, theoretically, Rock on SmackDown, but Rock's out of the picture. And you have Hogan, which had some shelf life to it, limited shelf life.
Right.
But you could have feuded with him, and that could have been Triple H could have been defending against Austin and Hogan, kind of in that part. And instead, you had things like The Undertaker having this cup of coffee with the title. So, whatever, we're going too far back.
Here's the thing, though. Full circle to where you were getting to. Your scenario, good though it is, would leave no oxygen for the guy we're about to talk about, Brock Lesnar. What happened that year created the pathway for him to get through, much like Goldberg in 98. New guy on a loaded roster who broke through. Lesnar was the equivalent in 02. He got through on a roster with big names.
It's funny you said that, and I don't want to go into all of the wasted man hours I've done in my life, rebooking 2002, 2003 WWE, but I still clearly, even with that Triple H thing, I would have had him lose to Austin and then have Austin lose to Lesnar at SummerSlam. I would have had him lose to Austin, get his revenge by winning in a summer pay-per-view, and then him being the guy who jobbed at Lesnar at SummerSlam.
I don't want to be critical, but that's not a real long shelf life for Triple H Austin. You started at Mania.
Mania at SummerSlam is kind of like, in that era, you got to remember, man, 5 months was forever.
Okay.
To do one title, to have Triple H. I mean, the thing is, I don't know how long that click thing could have lasted. And to be honest, I think you're giving it that idea too much credit.
Okay.
Austin kind of, again, maybe he'd be pissed and leave anyway as a transitional champion between Triple H and Lesnar.
Right.
I think what it does is it saves you from having to do what they did, which was call The Rock and beg him, please, please be a transitional champion to Lesnar. Remember that. Remember what they did.
Wasn't he coming back anyways? Or
no, he came back just to do that.
Oh, okay.
He came back for the July pay-per-view, won it, and then jobbed in August.
Okay.
Despite not being on TV very much between them, because they just did those videos, which were really
That's
good.
Right.
But do you remember how many times they changed the world title anyway in that era?
It went from
Triple H to Hogan to Undertaker to Rock.
It was
they changed it four
WCW
times.
WCW 99, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I think one title change is not that bad. So anyway, now that we've gone over how they screwed up 2002. Let's go to the Royal Rumble 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a show primarily built around reestablishing Brock Lesnar, who is now a babyface, as the number one contender for the title. When we talk about Brock, there's a couple things I want to mention. One is our issues with smiling Brock.
Right.
This speaks to your point from 02 with Triple H about neutering your baby faces.
Yep.
Vince doing that. But before we kind of just get to that, and I think that's kind of accepted. By the way, we should mention when it comes to smiling Brock, when we reference that, because not everyone knows these things.
Right.
When we talk about smiling Triple H, smiling Brock, smiling whoever, it's in reference to a Diesel promo in 95 after he lost the title. He cut this promo on Vince. You know, it's kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, peel back the curtain. One of the first times they'd done this where Nash had referenced how Vince had told him, you just can't smile enough as champion. And he was smiling Diesel. So,
having said that, here's the interesting thing. As I reflect back on this, you've got Lesnar turning face by default, essentially, with Heyman turning on him with Big Show and Angle in like November, December of 2002, I think, right?
Yeah, the turn happened at Survivor Series.
Survivor Series, okay. To me, the most egregious Smiling Brock stuff was after WrestleMania. The build to Angle, I didn't see as much of that.
Okay.
Once he'd beaten Angle, that's when it got out of control.
I don't remember the post-Mania stuff as much. Truth be told, post-Mania 19 became a casual WWE viewer for a little bit of time.
I remember enough of it to know that it was a thing of, like, it started with, like, the mutual respect stuff with Kurt Angle, and by God, we hated each other, but I respect you so much. We're both, you know, great
amateur
wrestlers.
I just thought that really until this past year after Mania 31 that Brock Lesnar never should have been a babyface. I just thought he was a great monster heel. And I don't think he should have ever turned face during this era, or at least how he did. I certainly do not think he should have lost the title to the Big Show at Survivor Series. If I remember correctly, was it Hulk Hogan of the belief that he was going to return at that show, which was an MSG,
yeah.
and get his job back that he did to Lesnar on SmackDown.
Yeah, yeah, because he had a verbal agreement with Vince, or he thought he did. And Vince was like, yeah, 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 we'll work it out later on. I just want you to go out right now and do a clean job and let him paint your blood on you. And so Hogan went out and did it, and later on Vince is like, what are you talking about? We're not going to do that, which to me is just awesome.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Vince is kind of a dick sometimes. That's one of my
favorite dick stories. That's heel-on-heel violence that I can approve of. But, you know.
No, I wanted to say this.
Yeah.
More fantasy booking alert. If you didn't have to call The Rock back for SummerSlam in that desperation mode, mm-hmm. you could have had Brock versus Rock at Survivor Series.
You could have.
In MSG, six-year anniversary of Rock's debut.
Right.
Have Brock over there. Now, it will be interesting because I don't think the crowd would have taken to Brock in the way they did when he was against Rock at SummerSlam as if he was against Austin. Because
right.
there was always that thing with Austin. The crowd never really turned on Austin in individual matches the way they sometimes did to The Rock.
Here's a funny thing, too. You're looking at alternatives for SummerSlam in 02. I'll tell you this, bump everything up a month. Since they were about to get out of the awful booger red heel run for The Undertaker anyways, he was the fall opponent for
Lesnar.
Put it on Taker in the summer. Taker turns face to face Lesnar at SummerSlam.
All right.
Could have done that.
It's water under the bridge. Bottom line is, my issue with 03 is I did not really like this whole need to reestablish Brock as the number one contender. Now, he should have been. I just kind of felt the whole thing was very formulaic,
mm-hmm.
and it really hurt Brock when they created the Raw champion,
because
mm-hmm. he was really, really set to be kind of the next superstar in this company that they needed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it really hurt him losing to the frickin' Big Show the way he did.
Right.
So, and then they did that convoluted storyline when the title went from Big Show to Angle. And going into this, it just kind of felt like, all right, Lesnar's probably going to win. It's going to be him and Angle at WrestleMania.
Right.
And while that match, I think, would do great today, mm-hmm. kind of in this post-UFC understanding of athletics, you know, like, that'd be a big deal.
Right.
Now, I don't know if the world was that ready for it in 03 as the Mania main event. That Mania, remember, kind of struggled. Now, it wasn't just those two's fault. The booking generally sucked anyway.
They would have never done that in the singular title era, I think. But they did.
No,
It was an experimental thing because
right.
you also had the world title on Raw.
Which
also had Vince versus Hogan
and
that
Rock
garbage
versus
ball,
Austin.
And Rock versus Austin. So theoretically, it was a diverse.
Yeah, but that was the main show. I thought that, again, going back to the fact that you needed to really establish Lesnar and that Raw becoming the Triple H show, a Triple H's champion. Mm-hmm. Undercut that somewhat. I thought that this Mania did not need, and again, we'll get to this mm-hmm. at the end of the program, did not need two champions at this point. I thought that Lesnar should have stayed champion through Mania and been the kind of singular, obvious main event. But we'll
okay.
get to that later.
All right.
But the bottom line is they didn't do that.
All right.
And so, with the show, we should get into the show. Unless,
you
did you have,
well,
did you,
last thing here, just brief intro notes here, and this is something I talked to you about off air, that this occurred to me when I was watching this again and when I was doing the setup. We're coming off of, this is the end of a 12-year period in the industry that we've never seen before or since. It's the ass end of the first boom to the ass end of the second boom. There are three times I feel like if you go Rip Van Winkle and you just watch the shows 2 years apart, you would never believe they're only 2 years apart. First time is 92 to 94. It's the greatest drop-off of talent in company history. You watch the 94 Rumble without context after the 92 one. Wait a minute, where'd everybody go? Why does it suck now? 97 to 99. 97, they didn't even start hinting at Attitude until later in the year. DX, Austin is stunnering everybody. Brett is swearing on Raw. There's no hint of Attitude in 97. By 99, hey, who's this Mr. McMahon guy who's got a corporation? It's full-on Attitude era. 2001 to 2003, you can't point to any overarching theme. But these 2 years, we talked about a lot of the things already. Brand split, general managers. Eric Bischoff and Stephanie McMahon are the general managers. We have, as we will touch on through the course of the show, Shawn Michaels is back. Ric Flair, Scott Steiner, the things that we will be talking about through the course of this here. You have Brock Lesnar as a former WWF, or former WWE, and now it's WWE. It's not just a brand split, but it's WWE now. Brock Lesnar, who we never heard of at the 2002 Rumble. That's one thing we didn't touch on. This guy came completely out of nowhere. He debuts the night after WrestleMania. So this is whiplash. This two-year period, we complained about there's been no change in the years since. I'd say there was 10 times the amount of change from 01 to 03 than we've seen from 2003 to the end of 2015 when we're doing this. It's the opposite of what we have now. The 12 years since.
Yeah, they almost didn't let the product breathe. They almost went go too fast. They were getting so desperate to kind of recapture lightning in a bottle that they tried so many things, threw so much shit at the wall that it was just like, whoa, guys, how about come up with a long-term plan and execute? Let's see if it works. Let's give these things more than 2 week shelf life.
By the way, there was another thing, too. There was a video game. I'm almost certain it was during the 03 Rumble because I jotted it down here, and it was either 03 or 04, but I think it was 03. And it was talking about, and it separated out, I think, I don't know what they called the 1980s era, but there was that era, there was the Attitude era, and then there was today. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's early 2003, because in my mind,
the early era the Federation years.
Federation years, yes. And then that, but like, I found that surprising. Did you find that surprising? Because, like, I thought in their mind they were still deluded enough to think it was the Attitude Era. Because the Attitude Era is synonymous with the Glory Days, and they weren't admitting that it wasn't the Glory Days anymore. You know, on air they weren't admitting that, Kyle.
I wonder.
Am I making too much out of that?
Did that air live on the pay-per-view? I guess it did.
It did. Okay. It did. Okay. So it's like, I thought that was weird. They were drawing a line of demarcation. And I want to make one more macro point about the era before we get into the Rumble. And that being, this is very important for people to understand. Attitude Era, it ended whenever it was. 01, 02, we can agree to disagree.
I thought it died when Steve Austin turned heel and really the dirt was shoveled on it when the crowd started cheering Hulk Hogan over The Rock.
I would say some point during the invasion, whatever. But here's the thing, is that we tend to, an Attitude Era. It was great product, entertaining. Boy, was it filthy then. We kind of tend to put up a wall that doesn't exist. Because 03 to 07, there was a lot of filth, but it was no longer entertaining filth. The PG era started in 08, but it really kind of started in 07 after the Benoit stuff. The 2003 to 2007 years had a lot of the, say, Katie Vick, anybody. I mean, on and on and on we go. Well, that was 02. I guess that's a bad example. But they kept doing stuff like that. So that's my point. But, yeah, on 03.
Oh, God, Katie Vick.
Yeah, that was.
Oh, and Shibby said, you know, and this is something that you won't see as time goes on.
Right.
Raw and SmackDown, because Paul Heyman was booking SmackDown initially,
mm-hmm.
were booked very differently at first. Remember, Raw was kind of like the Attitude Era storyline type, although they were the Katie Vick thing was so bad.
Right.
It's still doing that where Paul Heyman, he had the SmackDown 6 and was just doing long matches.
Yep.
That one of the real failures of this brand extension thing is that they would just book the shows similarly,
mm-hmm.
and then eventually SmackDown would just become a B version of Raw, which really killed it.
Right.
But you at least hear going into this 03 Rumble had some differentiation between the brands, and we'll certainly see some differentiation when it comes to terms of quality of the world title matches here.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need to talk about Brock Lesnar.
Yep.
This was an okay show,
mm-hmm.
but I just couldn't get over the fact that I was like, all right, yeah, it was just kind of like very ho-hum and obvious that he was going over here, and it was just a little anticlimactic. We start the show with a match against the Big Show.
Mm-hmm.
This was booked as a Royal Rumble qualifier. They were trying to add some heat to Lesnar, like, oh, you know, he's got to win this match just to get in the Rumble.
How many times throughout history have they fed Show to Lesnar historically? The ultimate crutch.
I thought that this, other than the fact Brock Lesnar got his job back from Survivor Series, kind of failed this match. In the sense, there was no real story told. There was no drama. It was kind of an extended squash. The announcers at the end were trying to sell, oh, what does Brock Lesnar have left after this? I'm like, it was a 6-minute match.
Also, here's the thing, motivation. I don't remember the specifics of it, but looking at the broad strokes from the pay-per-view, Why again did Big Show stick with Paul Heyman after he...
Again, it was very convoluted. Yeah. I think like he like didn't want to, but he's like, oh, yeah, you know, you make a lot of sense.
And okay,
like,
oh, yeah. But, that's dumb.
So here's the issue with it. That, like, remember when we talked about the 2000 Rumble and we were dealing with the Jericho-China-Holly match? And mm-hmm. I said the only positive thing I could say about this is thank God they didn't do something stupid like have Jericho lose.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that's kind of the way that most people, at least I did, looked at this match. It's like, okay, it's supposed to be this heat on Lesnar to get in the Rumble. But as a viewer, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just out thinking myself, I'm like, well, of course he's going to win. Like, that'd be really horrible if they didn't put him in the Rumble. That'd be really stupid. So I think that this didn't work. And compounding that issue is they didn't even, like, do, like, an injury angle here. That there was no heat. Like, I was not buying the story they were selling, they being the announcers, when mm-hmm. they kept saying, what does he have left for this? Can Brock Lesnar still manage to win the Royal Rumble and do this? Like,
right.
I compare this, and I know you hate 94's Rumble.
Yeah.
But I compare this to, say, Bret Hart in 94 mm-hmm. and what they did with him,
sure.
where they did the big injury angle with Owen.
Right.
And then, they really made it seem like he couldn't come out, and they
right.
did even like a false thing where you thought it was he missed his turn, and mm-hmm. he winds up coming out later. He's selling the knee like just
a
few others can. That was so much better
yes.
than Lesnar here.
I totally agree.
I also should mention the Big Show was in jeans for some reason in this, and it made him kind of look like a jobber.
That was weird, and I have in my notes here as well. And again, I a lot of times tend to look at the dynamics of a match, and you have Lesnar, who was forced to turn face by the crowds because of being an ass kicker who took no steps backward. I have in my notes here, he was working from underneath for long stretches. They were so desperate to try to add drama to a match that you and I agree had none.
He looked weak. So here's the thing.
I mean, yeah, he hit the big moves in the end. It was an extended squash in that way, but he worked from underneath a lot.
Here's the thing. So maybe it wasn't Smiling Brock.
Yeah.
Maybe I just kind of wanted to use that because we always joke around with those terms.
The Smiling Brock stuff gets a lot worse later in the year.
Do you know what? Here's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I meant to write this down in my notes, but I didn't. Thank God it came back to me.
Okay.
The issue is this. They tried to have Lesnar be kind of this sympathetic baby face.
Right.
But he wasn't far removed from being a monster heel.
Right.
And you never... Although, okay, I guess he had his undefeated streak, his
right.
manager turned on him. It never clicked. Like, the switch over from monster heel to sympathetic face, I don't think worked.
I'm going to go back to that term that I invented again when we were talking about this with Triple H in 02. Vince's tendency to white meatify his baby faces. In Vince's mind, baby faces need to get sympathy. I don't know about you, but I don't look at Brock Lesnar and see Ricky Morton. That's not his strength.
No, you're right. You're
That's
right.
not what and, he is supposed to do.
That being said, they needed, the way they did this, they needed, don't you think, like, again, I guess that.
If you have to, then work an injury angle. Do
yeah,
whatever.
Think,
it comes
I
out with a shoulder
taped up. I think that helped with the sympathy.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's like, all right, he just kicked ass. And the most damning thing here, let's get to the Rumble. Because
let me just clarify. If he has a shoulder taped up, in my mind, it's not sympathy. But it's, man, he's a tough son of a bitch because he battled through it.
Great
It's
point.
That.
Okay. I'm glad I let you say that.
Okay, good.
So here was the most damning thing I thought about how that opening match didn't work. Because we're going to jump to the Rumble now.
Okay.
Which Lesnar wins, in case you forgot. He seemed less over when he came out for the Rumble than that opening match. Where
sure.
that match was a little, drew more heat than I remembered that opener. It could have just been because it was the opener of a pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't seem nearly as over when he came out for the Rumble, and they had him come out really late at 29. So, again, there wasn't – you compare it to Brett, who I know came out late in that one, but he did such a good job working the injury that he pulled it off.
Right.
Here it's like, okay, Brock beat the crap out of the Big Show in 6 minutes, and now he draws number 29 in the Rumble. It's like, oh, wow.
He had 2 hours to sit out.
Yeah, he just kind of lucked out, you know? And
I agree.